Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of Energy in Action. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things mito and rare disease, and I'm excited for you to meet our next guest. Let me tell you a little bit about our conversation today. I'm speaking with the founding partners of Cure Mito. Casey and Sophia are both moms to children who have Leigh syndrome, a form of mitochondrial disease. Their mission is to empower families to come together with a common goal of finding treatments and ultimately a cure for this devastating disease. Patients are at the heart of everything they do. These two amazing ladies have joined their efforts to raise awareness and, more importantly, to identify patient populations that are affected by mitochondrial disease and specifically Leigh syndrome. So let's just jump into the conversation. I just really want to say how excited I am to be speaking with you two today as a mom of a mito patient. I can't tell you how many times I've dabbled in my brain in the wee hours of the morning on how can I make a difference? How can I move this forward? Feeling selfish that I want to improve my kid's life and trying to be philanthropic as well and say, well, as long as I'm doing it for Ted and others, you know, that makes me feel better. But you guys just really did it. And I'm super impressed and can't wait to hear more about how this all went together. I just want to remind all of our listeners that we know you're out walking, jogging in carpool lanes, whatever it is you do while you're listening to your podcast. We understand, and we'll have everything up on our show notes so you can get the links and the information that we talk about. So don't worry about needing to pause or grab a pen. We got you, and we'll have it all available to you on our show notes. I'd like to introduce Casey. She founded Cure Surf One, and her story is what just really started it all for me. So, Casey, why don't you just go ahead and tell everybody your story?
Thanks, Stephanie, so much. So, our journey began 7 years ago when my son was diagnosed with Leigh syndrome in 2014. And at that time, you know, the doctors gave us the diagnosis. They sit you down and say, look, there's nothing you can do. Go home and enjoy whatever time you have left with your child. And my husband and I are fighters. And we said, that is not what we're going to do. We are going to try to solve this for hopefully for our son and other afflicted children with this devastating disease. So we started our CureSurf One Foundation in 2018 as a family foundation to fund preclinical work for AAV9 gene therapy at UT Southwestern in Dallas, Texas. So we connected with other Surf One Leigh syndrome families to form this foundation to raise the funds necessary to pay for a preclinical proof of concept idea that maybe this could work for our children.
And how did you find the other families?
Right. So we connected with these families through, I put out a call on Facebook and social media, just please, you know, anybody who's interested and wanting to change this disease, you know, please get in contact with me. And I had a couple of families reach out, and they were totally on board with fundraising and getting, and they believed in this idea of gene therapy. Mm. And that's how we formed CureSurf One.
Good old social media. Excellent. I'm so proud of you.
Right.
Were you scared when you put out that first post? Were you like, well, here it goes?
Yeah. Yeah. I said, this is it, you know, and we had an ambitious goal of $1 million. We needed $1 million+. And so we were thinking, how are we going to raise these funds to pay for this research? And sure enough, you know, as the months rolled by, within a year, we had $1 million to move forward with this research. And now, you know, we're wanting to help other mutations in Leigh syndrome as well. So it's been an experience and a journey that we would love to share with other patients in the community.
Wow. You raised $1 million+ in your foundation already for research. Wow.
Right.
Excellent
yeah.
work. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. And was that primarily just through families?
Right. Through families, through corporate donations, matching programs. We did anything from lemonade stands to golfing tournaments and everything in between.
Everything in between. Wow. That is so inspirational. So fast forward. So that was 2018. Here we are in 2021, trying to claw our way out of this pandemic and kind of get the world refocused on moving forward to what matters. How did CureSurf One morph into Cure Mito?
That's a very good question. And I'm so, CureSurf One, we really hit the ground running and we learned a lot along the way. And Cure Mito, since we are so close with Surf One to file our investigational new drug with the FDA, by the end of this year, you know, our journey for Surf One has now kind of ended. And so we wanted to create an inclusive foundation for more mutations in Leigh syndrome and mitochondrial diseases. And so we want to share our journey, our footsteps, how we did this, and give families hope and to know that this is out there. It's going to take a lot of hard work, but this research can be done if we all come together. It really does take a village. So,
wow. So now your son is what inspired all of this. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about him?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it's he's my hero. He's my hero. Will is now 9.5 years old. He was diagnosed at age 2.5. He is a funny little boy. He is cognitively super smart and right where he needs to be age-wise. It's just his body is deteriorating. So he's now no longer able to walk or talk or eat, but cognitively he is with it. He knows everything that's going on. And hopefully with this new gene therapy that may come into clinical trial, hopefully he's able to try this drug and hopefully it'll help him.
Wow. I know with my son, I've always equated it to, it's like watching a candle melt away, watching your child lose those skills. And it's not an overnight experience by any stretch. It's definitely a slow, slow, horrible deterioration. And I'm amazed at how you were able to come up with finding the research for this. And gene therapy has just, you hear people whispering about it, but nobody's really willing to jump in and say, yes, let's try it.
And so thank you for saying that. No, thank you for saying that, because when my son was diagnosed in 2014, that is the first thing that had popped into our mind was we've got to do a gene therapy. And mm-hmm. So we talked to our specialists. We're like, okay, how do we get this started? We need this gene therapy for this monogenetic disease. And they said, don't even waste your time. That's 20 years down the road. Don't waste your time mm-hmm. and energy and money. Don't do it. Well, we put that in the wayside and funded other research in the interim. And then when we met with the team out at UT Southwestern and, you know, we brought our case to them and said, hey, we want you to take on Leigh syndrome. And what do we need to do to get the ball rolling? You know, and basically we needed to fund that preclinical research. And that was it. And so that got the ball rolling. And we knew there was a possible that it may not work. You know, we knew that we could raise $1 million and the preclinical work just not come that good. We knew that, but that was a risk we were willing to take because there's nothing being done right now for our son's disease.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere. That's what I keep telling people is, we heard the exact same words that you just repeated when our son was given his diagnosis was there's nothing we can do. Take him home, do what you can, do what you want. Basically, good luck to you. And that's gut-wrenching as a parent. And that was in 2006. And so kind of on the cusp of the internet. So I was trying really hard to be an internet warrior, but there just wasn't the capabilities out there as there are today. Man, to just for you guys to just like immediately jump to gene therapy, I'm so jealous and so thankful.
Yes. Well, we're hoping we can start checking off these mutations and Lee syndrome and start checking them off and get these kids treated. And hopefully we can just wipe out this disease as a whole. You know, that is, now it's a pipe dream, but it's a dream, and hopefully we can make it come true.
It happens. I mean, I feel like today's scientists are eons smarter than where we ever were before, because they have the ability to collaborate with so many people worldwide. And I think that's how they're able to just move things forward at a quicker pace, is that there's just that ability to just reach out and say, hey. And I think college students of today are more likely to raise their hand and ask the questions, where they're a little bit more inquisitive than my generation. I'll say that for sure. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Sophia, let's bring you into this partnership. How did you become part of Cure Mito?
Sure. So my story with mitochondrial disease started 4 years ago. I had a baby, my daughter Miriam, and she died very quickly. She lived for only 7 weeks. It was a complete shock. She was born absolutely healthy, and my pregnancy was absolutely normal. I have three boys who are now 16, almost 14 and 9, and they are healthy, thank God. And so there was nothing like this expected. And she was born healthy, and then she deteriorated and she died really, really quickly. And there was nothing that we really did not have hope, and there was nothing we could do. She was at Boston Children's Hospital. And so this is how I came to know about mitochondrial disease, unfortunately. And after my daughter died, I was trying to find a way to do something meaningful in her memory where I could help. And my professional background is in data analysis. I work in the pharmaceutical industry in statistical programming and analysis on clinical trials for rare disease. And so I have been trying to help with data, patient registries, and I eventually came to know Casey, I think online at first, and she told me about her idea about Cure Mito, and I've been very supportive. I loved how much they have achieved and how quickly things are done. And with my work with patient registries, I also feel like we just have to do so much better and we can do so much more. And so I think that I had the same kind of approach. So I was very honored to be to join Cure Mito as a board member.
Wow, I would say so. So you have mentioned patient registries now a few times, and in the rare disease community, that's always something that kind of piques everybody's interest. Like, what is a patient registry? And either of you can join in. And why is it so important that we start developing robust registries?
Patient registries are very, very important for multiple reasons. They give us an ability to find patients and to know who they are everywhere in the world, and be able to reach out to them for research opportunities, for clinical trial opportunities, to know our patient community and be able to characterize them in some way, for example, what mutations they have and things like that. We can use it also gives us an ability to build natural history data, which is data that patient provides over time. And this way we can track how the disease progresses and develops. And that can be really, really important in drug development and clinical trials. We could potentially even use this data instead of a placebo arm in a clinical trial, because that's basically a natural progression of the disease. So they have to be designed in the right way, because if the data is not accurate, it's not consistent, or there's not a lot of missing data, or we can't really make sense of it, then unfortunately it's not as useful. So patient registers are extremely important, but it's also equally important to really understand and take the time to understand how to design them, upfront, so that the data is useful later on.
I would just like to add that as a rare disease, registries are so important because our patient population is so small to begin with that this helps us understand the rare disease much better, which helps the researchers hopefully come up with a treatment or a cure. So this registries are a pillar in itself and much needed, and just we need this in rare disease. So
definitely. So I applaud that you guys are a disease patient advocacy group and that you're putting together your registry for CureSurf1, correct? And this is your way of trying to pull in all of the LAIS patients together, regardless of their mutation. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, all the patients for Leigh syndrome.
For Leigh syndrome. Okay. So once that data is put together, like what happens to it? Literally, what happens to it?
So this is where it gets tricky, because I think a lot of times patients feel like nothing happens because they join. We've had many registry efforts in mitochondrial disease community, and patients join, and then they never know, did anything even happen? And this is where we are really trying to do it better. I think in order for us to really have a two-way relationship with the patients and for patients to really feel like what they're doing matters, we really have to get back to the patients so that they see what's going on. So what we plan to do is when patients sign up and they enter their data, if they agree and share the data with us, we are going to look at it. If we see something there that patients, like for example, there are some might be some inconsistent responses or something where we may need clarification, we may get back to them. We want to verify that we have been able to accurately capture their genetic diagnosis if they have it, because that's really important for researchers. So we really want to make sure that is accurately captured in the data. And we will analyze the data and we will report back what we found. So we will summarize any findings that we get out of the data, and we will create tables or graphs that we will be able to share with the patients who joined or with the whole community. That's really, really important. I think we have to do it as a community. Otherwise, patients just don't feel connected and they don't really know if their participation is making a difference.
I couldn't agree more with you on that. I feel like sometimes some of the social media, Facebook, like groups, there's so many groups out there now for all the different types of mitochondrial disease. And I know as a parent, I am giddy with glee when I find another mom who has a child with the same presentation. I'm like, oh, you truly feel like you have found your missing link and somebody who understands what you're going through, who you can ask questions, what's worked, what hasn't worked, how do you cope with something, what doctors do you see? It's an amazing ability to share information and to glean information. And I love that you just said that you're going to share this information back to those who have registered and said, hey, we have this many people registered, and here's kind of a summary of what we're finding. I think that would be, well, I'm a data geek, but I think that would just be, I would look forward to that email on a regular basis to see what you have and how it's progressing, especially by as more and more people pop into the registry, how the data grows. I think that is amazing.
Absolutely. And you know, with a rare disease, it's like you said, it is exciting when you meet that person who is similar to your child, and mm-hmm. and you go back and forth and ask these questions, and it's amazing. So mm-hmm. and that's what we need. We need the sense of community, and we're all in this together, right?
Yep. So. Well, and especially I'm sure like you both heard, you know, at all the doctor's appointments you've attended, oh, your child is unique. We don't know what to do. You leave feeling so desolate. And then when you find other parents who are like, oh yeah, this is what we tried, or, oh, don't use that, use this. You're like, wait a minute, we're not so unique. Thank goodness. Because this is not really the time to be unique.
Yes, yeah. We really are. Parents are really the biggest. We understand the disease. We are the most knowledgeable on our diseases. You know, mm-hmm. We are, not the doctors.
And I think pharmaceutical companies for sure are taking note to that the patients are the expert on what's happening, and that presumption of we know what's best is definitely falling by the wayside. And they are reaching out and asking, what is it that's actually happening to you? Okay, can you tell us? And then hopefully your medical records in the registry support what you just told us, so we can take that data and figure out how to fix it.
Yeah. There is no question that pharmaceutical companies are becoming more and more patient focused, I think. For me, I feel like with the registries, if we can make them better, that data could be very, very useful for our pharmaceutical companies as well.
I think you two are definitely on the right track. So I have a question. So now with SURF1, you started out by collecting fibroblasts. So is that data considered a patient registry, or like, how does that work into this?
So with we have a partnership with Coriell, and last year we hit like a brick wall in our research, and we needed to do more testing, and we needed to do that on fibroblast. Okay. And here we are with COVID, and everybody's on lockdown, and how are we going to get these patients from all over the world to come to UT Southwestern, give a skin biopsy and do this, you know, as a foundation for us to pay for that and to fund that would be astronomical. Right. I reached out to Coriell, and which is a part of the NIH, their NIGMS repository, and we set out and we collected over 36 skin samples over 9 different countries, and they are now in a biorepository at Coriell, which can be accessed by any researcher, academic center, anybody who has an IRB who wants to study SURF1 can get these fibroblasts and perform their studies on them. And, wow. Which is amazing. And we need this. We need people working on our diseases, right? So
definitely. And do you have to do anything as your organization to keep, like, how long will they get to stay in that repository? Is that infinite, or do you have to like resupply, or how does this work?
Right. So it's infinite. They are those samples will always be there, and they'll be there way past when they're immortal. we are really immortal now. Mm-hmm. All of our foundation, we funded the paying for the skin biopsies. That was our contribution to the fibroblast study, was paying for no out-of-pocket cost for the patients.
Okay. Wow. And you did that during a pandemic. That is amazing.
We did it during a pandemic, and it took us 2 months to collect 36 samples from 9 countries. So we're very happy and excited, and we hope to continue this with more mutations.
So if you have a new family who comes in and says, hey, we just found out about this, how can we be part of it? Do you just immediately send them a collection kit, or how do they get added to the collection?
Right. So there is an informational email that will direct them to Coriell, which will put them in touch with our SURF1 coordinator. And she then will send out the kit. They will have their samples collected. They mail it back to the institution, and the fibroblasts are grown and then put in the freezer, so to say. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. That is just amazing. I love that it's ongoing. So it wasn't like we've got our 36 and we're set. Like, you're just going to be continuously adding to it, because we know that all of these mutations are literally just a micro difference from each other. It's very hard to find two mito kids that are identical. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Absolutely.
Very hard.
100%. Mm-hmm.
So now moving forward, I also saw on your website that you have a new partnership with All Stripes, and that is part of a patient like registration, or how does that work in with what you are already working on?
So our partnership with All Stripes started with the SURF1-Lee syndrome. And so we needed to get sort of like a natural history, kind of an understanding of what SURF1 really is. And so we started this registry with All Stripes to collect medical records from patients from the United States, Canada, and the UK, and to learn more about our patient population to help us design a clinical trial for when we hopefully go into clinical trials with this gene therapy program.
Right.
And that's how our journey started out with All Stripes.
So one thing I want to explain about electronic health records, which is what All Stripes is collecting from the data. I just want to explain from the data perspective. Right now, there are many registries that say patient can go in and upload their electronic health records, which would be something like PDF files. But the important thing for patients to know is that in order for their electronic health records to be useful for research, it has to be, they have to be structured into data sets that researchers can then take and use, and they're structured in a way where they are split into, let's say, labs, medications, or, you know, other domains. So this is why partnering with All Stripes makes sense, because what they are doing is they get consent from patients and then they obtain these electronic health records and they actually create these data sets that could be used. And it's also very important for the medical records to be useful. It has to be complete information. So when someone tells patients, you can go in and you can upload your electronic health records, well, we are putting a huge burden on the patient if we are asking them to obtain all of their medical health records from any provider they might have seen. And so, and plus, if we don't even give them any details, they don't know what to upload. So some patients might upload, let's say, their labs from their last appointment, or someone might upload something else. And so it's just for industry or for researchers to use the data, it has to be complete and it has to be structured into data sets. So this is why it makes sense. This relationship with All Stripes is really making a lot of sense.
And I do want to mention one other thing with All Stripes is it's completely free. So it's, you do not have to pay for your medical records. It's completely free. They cover the cost of that. And for me as a mom, my child sees tons of specialists. And to have all those records in one spot is amazing. It makes life a lot easier when I log into All Stripes and I see all of our medical records there. And we even get to see doctor's notes, which sometimes when you order medical records, you don't always get to see. So that's always nice to see along with the other records. So it's free and you have all of your records in one spot.
I love the idea of that. I'm somewhat jealous of you because our disease group is not All Stripes ready yet, but boy, let me tell you, I will be hitting the go button the minute it is. So when you first started with All Stripes with Surf One, what was some of the data that they shared with you after they started registering more and more patients that came out that made you go, oh yeah, that makes sense, or oh, I didn't know about that? Was there anything, or did it all just like completely tie up the story of what you already had suspected?
It completely made sense. So I had already started my own kind of questionnaire just on Facebook with our private group. People are in wheelchairs. How many have G-tubes? How many have trachs? You know? Mm-hmm. And so this data set with All Stripes just basically confirmed that. Now this is, we haven't received detailed data sets, but from the ones that we have, it's just confirmation that what we knew was correct.
I love that you are already doing like your homegrown sleuthing. All right, Facebook question time.
Yes.
Man, I love you. I think I'm going to need to come down to Texas and sit down and on a patio and have a conversation.
Come on.
That sounds very intriguing.
Because we have to do that. It's like we as parents, we have to do this. We cannot wait for anyone else to do it for us, and no one is going to do it for us. So we know the urgency. So
right, we have to push our agenda and make sure we get to the top, because our our disease groups are equally as important as everyone else's. And
absolutely,
I feel like after 21 years in this this seat, more and more people are now able to talk about mitochondrial disease in the medical world, and you're finding it overlapping more and more and more with other groups or other, you know, oh, is there a correlation to Parkinson's? Is there a correlation to this? You know, oh, you're part of the neuromuscular group. It's like, yes, it's finally coming together.
Right.
You know, or
right.
You don't there feel like you're just connection. Floating. Yes.
Yeah.
And I have said this from the get-go. I don't care how they find a treatment. If they're looking for a treatment to cure MS and they find something to help my kid, I'm all for it. I don't care whose lab it's in or how they get there. Just find it.
Of course.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm from Minnesota, the 3M state. And we all know that post-it notes are a complete accident and scotch tape as well. And look at how they've changed the world, right? So I'm praying for that post-it note experience here.
Yes. So are we. Yes.
So what's next now for Cure Mito? Like where's your next step and how can we support that for you?
So I think our next steps are, is trying to get the SERF1 gene therapy into clinical trials by beginning of 2022. We're also working on mitochondrial DNA mutation Lee syndromes gene therapy. So it's a new technique called base editing. And so we are funding work for mitochondrial DNA Lee syndrome gene therapy. We are also starting a program, drug repurposing research initiative. And that is getting cell lines from all of these different mutations. You know, like we said, there's over 130 different nuclear mutations that cause Lee syndromes. We need to get those cell lines and start testing drugs that are already approved by the FDA against that to see if we have a hit. Because if we do, then this will keep our patients healthy enough until that gene therapy or cure is available.
Excellent.
And so that's our focus right now. And the registry.
And the registry.
And the registry. And,
the Lee syndrome registry, we expect it to be open, I would say, in early September or mid-September. And we want to be very, very transparent. We'll post information with sort of FAQ, the questions and answers, so that patients really understand why we are doing this registry, what type of data we are going to collect, why we are collecting it, who designed our surveys. We do have advisors for the registry, and we work together as a team. I think it's extremely important so that there are, you know, different perspectives are considered and people, you know, there's input. We're very excited about it and we'll be sharing information soon.
I was not prepared for that fast timeline. That's exciting. I thought you guys were going to say, oh, start of 2022 on that.
Oh,
that's
no,
amazing.
No, we're very much about doing things.
We want to move quickly here. And I do want to say one thing about CureSERF1, now Cure Mito. We are 100% volunteer led, parent led. All of our donations go towards research, and that's something that we are proud to say. And we are a total grassroots effort, and we are here to change the outcome of this disease.
That's really a powerful statement. Just change the outcome. So, how do you decide who gets the information? That once you get it all put into the registry and you're able to start putting together some meaningful data with it, how do you decide who to share that with?
So in our registry, so as far as just the findings, the overall summaries, that we will share publicly.
Public.
Mm-hmm. But as far as who gets the actual data to work on it, so we are doing our registry with Sanford Health Quartz. That's the name of the platform. Quartz stands for Coordination of Rare Diseases. And they have an IRB and the Scientific Advisory Board. Their IRB is reviewing our survey, and they are reviewing even the FAQ that we created for patients will be approved by the IRB. So they will make sure that everything is very accurate. And so if researcher wants to see the data, their scientific advisory board, together with us, we will decide together to share that data. But it's a very straightforward process. They have, I think they have 80 groups working with them. The way these questionnaires are designed, there will be a disease-specific questionnaire for Leigh syndrome and also the general questionnaire. And the general questionnaire is exactly the same for each rare disease that they work with. And so data can be harmonized, you know, they can query the data on a particular symptom and see how that's different in other rare diseases. So there's really a lot that can be learned from the data. The process for sharing is pretty straightforward.
I'm actually speechless. I took a breath when you said harmonized and being able to actually query on a symptom, because I think you really do have to get into the nitty gritty of things. And you can't just keep globally looking at this. We really have to look at what age did this start? What was the consequence of that symptom? This is truly a disease of the devil's in the details, I believe.
Yeah. And it's all about, and it's about collaboration. We are not going to, no singular person will cure this disease. It has to be a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so the more people working on it and the more people with access to this information, the quicker we can get to a treatment or a cure.
I 100% agree with that. All right, ladies, I have to wrap this up, but I do like to finish out our podcast with a fun thing called Rapid Fire. It's kind of a new trend on podcasting where we just ask some fun questions just to kind of gauge where everybody's at in life. And I don't know, I'm nosy. I like to ask questions. So you guys can decide who's going to answer first, but like, what is your favorite book that you read recently?
Oh gosh, Sophia.
I think I've read a lot of murder mysteries.
What is your favorite all-time, like you'll stop whatever it is you're doing, food to eat? Like, that's it. I got to go have that meal.
Chocolate.
For me, it would be sushi. I love sushi. We even make them at home. My kids can even make them.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Excellent. Wow. Excellent. I would not attempt that at home.
Well, it's actually very easy.
Okay. Well, I don't think mine would ever, I'm a complete winner of Pinterest fail. So I just don't think I would be able to handle any sushi, no matter how easy it is. It's just not going to look great. So, but all right. Well, you guys, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and I can't wait to keep following and checking back in to see how everything moves along with Cure Mito. I am full of admiration for the two of you and very full of gratitude that you two just jumped into the fire and said, we can't sit on the sidelines anymore. So thank you for doing that from another Mito mom who's not sure how to do what you guys just did.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
You are quite welcome. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps boost us up the charts and makes us easier to find. We recognize that people listen to us in various forms of activity. Please know that we will have all the information in our show notes, or you can simply go to mitoaction.org to find the links that we referenced here. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.